Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We got a really terrific show for you today. We have Kevin Stockman on from the Epoch Times TV, and we'll tell you all about Kevin here after we take care of some business. But you're not going to want to go away because we're going to talk about a topic here that does not get enough attention, and that's ESG, what's going on with Wall Street. And that's certainly been in current events lately here with the AGs getting involved, but we'll explore that with Kevin as well. But first, I need to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, do you have your storable food? I'm growing concerned about the supply chain. I'm growing concerned about food availability, what's happening with the egg farms, the food inflation. So do you have your storable food? If you don't, I don't know how long this is going to be available to you, but right now, my Patriot Supply is about the only company, it seems like, that has not sold out to the federal government, and they have plenty of food. They deliver on time, and the prices are the lowest in the industry. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, they have lots of variety. So let me recommend that you go to foodwithdave.com for the details. That's foodwithdave.com. Additionally, ladies and gentlemen, we have a situation where we're concerned about things that fly over our skies. And whenever I hear that, I think EMP. Now, I don't think this latest deal with the Chinese or whoever's flying over us has anything to do with an EMP, but it could. And if it can violate our airspace that way, I'm growing very concerned. And by the way, you'd say, what would happen if the lights went out? You'd have to scavenge for water, and you'd need water filtration. And we have the best filter out there, the Alexa Pure Pro Water Filter, ranked number one in the industry. You can see the research at waterwithdave.com, and we recommend you take a long look. It's also on sale. Limited supplies available. And that's not a sales pitch. That's an actual, absolute, true statement. And do you have your filter? Well, if you don't, let me recommend you get it today. Go to waterwithdave.com. That's waterwithdave.com. Well, we're really pleased and privileged to have Kevin Stockman on here, and my screen just went blank here. Okay, here we go. And Kevin has done some really good work in the past. He covered the mortgage debacle of 2008, which I'm sure a lot of us painfully remember. And he's a film producer, a former investment banker, so he knows of what he speaks about the topics we're going to talk about today. He has a current film out right now that we'll discuss called The Shadow State. And it was released by the Epoch Times and is available for viewing on Epoch Times TV. And Kevin, I want to welcome you to the show. It's always great to have people of your stature on. I really respect your employer. Epoch Times, I think, sets the standard for reporting about some of the chicanery that's going on inside our government.
Thanks, Dave, and I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, what made you take a look at ESG? I wanted to just kind of set that out there because we don't give this much attention and we should be.
Yeah, the finance world that I know, it can be kind of an arcane world that people don't know very much about. A lot of it happens behind the scenes. It's got its own kind of language. But this particular industry, the ESG industry, I felt was very important that people learn about this because it affects their lives so dramatically, not only with their investment money and their pension money, but the price of energy that they pay, what they pay for food, when they have to undergo DEI re-education in their corporate jobs and things like that. So I wanted people to be able to understand what this industry is, how it works, who's driving it, and how it affects them personally.
Yeah, well, it certainly is having a big effect. Just for people who may not know what we're talking about, can you tell us what that acronym ESG stands for?
Yeah, so ESG is environmental, social, and governance. It's an umbrella ideology that encompasses everything from climate change to racial and economic equity worldwide. They even throw in things like gun control and abortion rights into the bucket. So, that's what it is an ideology, but it is also an industry that has assets north of $50 trillion that they are able to use to arm twist corporations into going along with the agenda.
Is this why we see corporations invoking policies along the lines of climate change mitigation that are harmful to their bottom line?
Yes, so this is the reason, for example, that Exxon was forced to put climate change activists on their board. which will discourage them from further fossil fuel development and production. It's also why companies take very strange ideological positions. So you can look at a company like Disney that has made its reputation on producing family friendly and child friendly entertainment. They have now taken a political position fighting parents' rights laws. Disney in favor of sex ed for kids in grades kindergarten through third grade. They've revealed that they want to sexualize their content for children. They call it their not so secret gay agenda. And more recently, they've produced a children's program that promotes critical race theory. So this obviously might not be a good decision from a profitability or a shareholder's point of view. A lot of conservative families or just parents kind of hate this, but they're doing it anyway, and they're not doing it to please their shareholders. They're not doing it for profitability. They're not doing it for their customers or people who would subscribe to Disney Plus. They're doing it to up their ESG scores and to basically get in line with this ESG agenda.
That is just mind-boggling, though, that these corporations will almost self-destruct. Are they just? I know it's hard to get in the minds of other people, but if I were a stockholder in a corporation that was self-destructing to satisfy ESG, I would look for a new CEO and I would say, "Hey, we're here for profits. We're not here to play social games." I mean, where is that self-defense mechanism that you would expect to see on Wall Street that's been so strong since its inception?
Yeah, well, this is starting to happen. So we have seen a revolt of Disney shareholders. They did fire Bob Chapek, who was their CEO, who decided to take on these causes. Unfortunately, they replaced him with Bob Iger, who's just as much of an ideologue as his predecessor, and their content seems to be moving forward in the same direction. But they are now starting to experience pressure from shareholders because their stock is one of the worst performing stocks, even the horrible year that the S&P 500 has had. They've managed to be about twice as bad in terms of their share price performance. And this creates an opportunity. Now there's blood in the water. Shareholders can start to come in, purchase these shares at a discounted price, and try to force some changes on management. So that pushback is starting to happen. A recent survey by KPMG of CEOs found that 50% of them said that they were now putting their ESG initiatives on pause, given the recession and things like that. Having said that, there are some very strong forces that want to double down on this ESG movement, both in the Biden administration and in on Wall Street. And so there's no question that this conflict is going to heat up in 2023 and beyond, but it's not clear who's going to get the upper hand.
Yeah, I think it's an issue to be decided still, but I don't think BlackRock and these other associated companies have yet to feel the wrath of the American people. I think that the worst for them is still ahead as people discover what's going on. And as much as it's kept out of the media, the mainstream media, there is becoming a general awareness of this now. I wanted to ask you, too, about something that I have read about, and is it related to what we're talking about? And that's regard to the action of several state attorneys general who have looked into and have taken some action against ESG. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, some states have been pushing back pretty dramatically on this. You know, speaking of BlackRock, they were just testifying next to State Street in front of the Texas State Senate in December. And of course, before the Texas senators who are threatening to boycott them, they're saying, oh, we don't do any of this stuff. You know, we certainly don't use our shareholding power to influence any company. But they couldn't give a straight answer when asked, well, what about these statements on your website? What about things that Larry Fink, BlackRock CEO, has said? So states are pushing back and these asset managers are beginning to backpedal a little bit. Having said that, 14 blue state attorney generals have now written letters, and also comptrollers who control their pension money have written letters saying, we demand that BlackRock enforce an ESG agenda on companies whose shares they own. So by taking on a political position, a lot of these financial companies and asset managers and woke banks are finding themselves now caught in the middle between red states and blue states, you know, because that's what happens when you wade into politics. That's what Disney learned.
Well, yeah, I just, like I said, I think the avalanche in reverse has not yet occurred. And I think that Florida's kind of setting the trend, but I think the worst for these people is to come as people gain awareness, because people are going to, they're going to revolt by where they spend their money. Have you seen a precipitous decline in Disney profits?
Well, that certainly happened, and they certainly fell short on their subscribers to Disney Plus. I think a lot of people are they don't trust them anymore. That you can, you know, let your kids sit down in front of the Disney Channel and be comfortable with what they're going to be exposed to, whether it's sexual content or political content or whatever. You know, a lot of parents are starting to question, hey, is this appropriate for my little child to be watching this stuff? So the trust has definitely, you know, been eroding in that sense. But as I said, you know, we don't see Disney backing off of that yet. You know, we see them doubling down on this sort of content.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like they're not getting the message. When I take a 30,000-foot view of this, and I wanted to get your reaction to this since you're closer to it than I am, I almost see what I would describe as a Maoist type of cultural revolution going on, and ESG is spearheading a lot of it. How do you react to that?
Yeah, you know, at the core of this movement is this concept of central planning. And, you know, central planning is not new to economics. You know, the Soviets certainly tried it. Certainly the Chinese did, you know, that brought us wonderful things like collective farming that caused, you know, the starvation of tens of millions. But that's at the core what the ideology is that, you know, this should be economics by committee. And whether that's at the World Economic Forum in Davos or corporate boardrooms or the UN or whatever, you know, that we can get the elites of the world together, you know, corporate CEOs, politicians, and then billionaires like Bill Gates and Michael Bloomberg and people like this. And we can decide what the energy policy should be. We can decide what's going to be produced, whether it's fossil fuels or wind and solar. We can even decide things like what you drive. We're starting to see bans on internal combustion engines. We can decide even what you eat. So they don't like beef, for example. It emits too much, cows emits, you know, too much CO2. And so the view is, well, you know, we can get our protein from insects and fungi. And so that's being pushed, and people like Bill Gates are investing heavily in these companies that make these alternative synthetic meats that we're supposed to eat. Bill Gates is also currently the largest owner of farming land in the United States, and there's been a huge push among these huge investment funds to buy up farmland, even as the Biden administration is putting all these new regulations on small farmers, whether it's through the EPA or through the SEC, forcing them to do climate audits of their farms, that is driving many of them to the brink, not to mention the cost of fertilizer and diesel fuel. And then, you know, we have investment funds and the wealthy people that are able to kind of front run these policies and purchase farmland and profit in that way.
Do you have an opinion? I mean, I understand why they want to do central planning. I mean, we're ultimately dealing with extreme socialism. But why do they care so much about indoctrination of kids to certain ideologies that seem to be almost irrespective of economic their economic plans? What is the interest in controlling families and what's taught and what's acceptable?
Yeah, you know, they always go after the kids. And this is core to the ideology, again, whether it's, you know, the Soviets or the National Socialists or the Fascists, you know, that they know that the future is with children. The UN has its 17 Sustainable Development Goals. They call them SDGs, and it runs the gamut from, you know, health to education to climate justice to equity. And this has now found its way into the curriculum of most schools, public and private, in the United States through this concept called social and emotional learning. And you can just go to, I mean, you don't have to take my word for it. You can go to these sites. You can look at, go to UNESCO, and you can see, you know, SEL as a path to UN SDGs. And that's what they're pushing on children. So it's, ESG is the business component of this whole movement. Social emotional learning is the educational component, and then the political component is all the laws and bans and subsidies that we're seeing coming at the government level.
Okay, that does make a lot of sense, but they just seem to be spending an inordinate amount of time to indoctrinate kids. But I look at this, and I'm an empty nester now, but I do have nephews and nieces that concern me about what they're getting, and their parents are hyper-vigilant to this as well. And the homeschool movement is growing, alternative schools that aren't teaching this, they're growing. What did I hear? Like, public schools have 400,000 less students now than they did before COVID. It's kind of like people are voting with their feet. I know in Germany they outlawed homeschooling. Do you think we're going to see something along those lines to force compliance?
There's definitely a movement to do that, and there are a lot of folks in the Board of Ed or whatnot that want to outlaw homeschooling. The fact is, parents seem to feel like they can escape, you know, social emotional learning and CRT by taking their kids to private schools, and that's generally not the case. Those schools are going to teach, you know, a lot of the same content, and they certainly have social emotional learning programs as well in private schools. So your option is to really take your kids out and homeschool them. And this is something that the bureaucrats do not like one bit, and you know, if it were possible to outlaw it, I'm sure they would. I think you are going to see more movement and more pressure on that being banned, or alternatively, to enforce the same curricula on homeschooling, you know, in order to get approval for it that you would get in the public schools.
Yeah, I completely get that. A couple concerns I have, though, about their programs. There are local laws governing what you can present to kids. And it seems to me, and I'm a former educator, and I've taught everything from high school to postgraduate. And so what I'm wondering here is, how do they escape the laws of child abuse, pornography, in the schools? Because there are clear statutes that prevent some of the reading materials I've seen exposed in school libraries and school curriculum.
Yes. There's the letter of the law, and then there's how it's enforced. So we live in Tennessee, and there's laws against teaching CRT and laws against sexual content. But, you know, when something appears in the library that's inappropriate for kids because of its sexual content or whatever, you know, that's a fight that then parents have to, first of all, they have to discover it. And then second of all, you know, they have to take that fight up to either the county or the town or the state level. And that takes time and it takes resources. So, there's the letter of the law, but, you know, enforcement is another question. And in addition, you know, the teaching colleges, which are producing these teachers, are uniformly on board with the progressive agenda. So the teachers that are in the classrooms, you know, we keep seeing these, you know, videos getting exposed on YouTube or whatever, you know, it keeps popping up because the people that are actually doing the teaching in some cases are on board with this ideology. And I don't want to badmouth teachers. We've been very, very happy with the teachers that have been teaching, you know, our son. And they've just been wonderful. So I like to think it's the exception rather than the rule, but there's enough of it that just keeps popping up that, you know, you have to think that there's a pattern here.
How do the social engineers, so to speak, how do they get the private schools, particularly the Christian schools, to go along with this?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I mean, you know, if you're in a state like New York or California, I don't think it's all that difficult. But, you know, even in Tennessee, we have an all-girls school here that created a scandal because they basically said that they were going to throw their door open to anyone who identified as female. And, parents pushed back against that, and then there was some backpedaling. But who knows what the actual policy is, you know, when all the dust settles. So, you know, part of it is that you have administrators who kind of believe in this ideology. They came up through that system. And then, you know, part of it is that there are certainly places where parents really want this, that they believe in this ideology and they want their kids schooled in it. So it's some combination of those things, I think.
I tell you, you have to wonder about the parents that would think this is okay, because first graders aren't ready to be sexualized in the way that I see it happening. One of the things that I've seen, and I wanted to get your reaction to how common you think this is, I interviewed telephonically someone named Sharona Bishop. She lives in Colorado, and she was going around to various school boards supporting parents and teaching them how to protest the implementation of these kinds of ESG programs. And the FBI came to her home one day unannounced. They did not have a warrant. They kicked the door down. They put guns to everyone's head. They manhandled her teenage daughter, and they never produced a valid warrant, and they seized all their electronics. I mean, just total tyranny. And she broke no law. She was engaged in completely protected activity by under the Constitution. How common is this to quell the rebellion against what's happening in the schools?
Yeah, I mean, we all know about the scandal with the FBI targeting parents for protesting at school board meetings, and that seems to have gone quiet, but I'm not sure that it's really stopped. So it's hard to really comprehend how our law enforcement, our federal law enforcement, could take a position like this, but they seem to be. And then there's a whole industry supporting it as well. It's, all this ed tech that, companies, Merrick Garland's son-in-law is one of the founders of one of these ed tech
So is that
companies.
Panorama Education?
Yeah,
Okay.
exactly. And it's not only that they are indoctrinating the kids and the ideology through, video gaming and curricula and things like this, but it's this endless surveying of kids that's being done in the schools, about very personal issues, your sexual preferences, your family's beliefs, and things like this. All this data is now being collected on our children, and the question, has been raised, well, what for? Are we creating social credit scores for our kids while they're still children? Are their answers to these surveys, are they going to follow them through school? Will they determine if they can get into the best colleges? Will they be used for employment? So, just this incredible data collection and surveying of our children in the schools, there's a whole industry behind that's profiting. And again, this is all being supported by the World Economic Forum and the UN.
Yeah, I want to get to the WEF in a second, but as you talk, it reminds me of something that I was involved in fighting against around 15 years ago, and it was a program called Teen Screen that originated at Yale University with Lori Flynn. Are you familiar with that program?
I'm not.
Yeah, just real briefly here, and for the listeners too, this isn't the first time they've tried indoctrination and profiling of students, but they did it with Big Pharma back in 2008. And my audience knows this, but Kevin, just so you know, I have a little bit of background in mental health. I used to be a therapist, and before I moved into college teaching, and I got to tell you, this was so inappropriate. I actually gave testimony on this at the Arizona State Legislature, where I live. And what they were doing is they would come in with these tests to diagnose basically social disorders, emotional and social disorders, and the tests had 80% false positives in them, and they were putting kids on psychotropic medication administered at school, and they didn't have to notify the parents. And the program actually penetrated into 43 states, not every district, but they had a presence in 43 states. And this is why I testified to Arizona to get it stopped. But this is what you're reminding me of when you're talking about this profiling of students along their belief systems with regard to sex and politics and so forth. I look for Big Pharma to jump into this too and kind of reinvigorate Teen Screen so they can make profits off kids. Of course, they're doing it right now with the vaccines, trying to make it mandatory in schools. But I look for them to do a return to Teen Screen. It's like these people never give up.
Yeah, the assumption behind the whole social emotional learning program that's embedded in all of these public school curriculums is that all of our children need psychological counseling,
Exactly.
and they need it from the school. They need it from their teachers, and they need it from school counselors. That somehow they're the ones who are qualified to do
And they
this,
are not. They are not,
and
Kevin.
they are not. And that the values have to be imposed by the school, not the parents. And in fact, if you look at what they call the SEL wheel, the ideological wheel, you know, at the core are school counselors and then teachers. Parents are somewhere out on a third periphery in terms of their role in all of this. So it really is an effort by the state to take over the teaching of values to children.
Yeah, well, was it Woodrow Wilson once said, give me a generation of young boys and I'll change society. And it looks like we're doing that with all children. I wanted to go to the WEF a little bit. This is an organization that both angers me and frightens me to the nth degree. And the thing that angers me the most is how much buy-in they get from American politicians that train in programs like the Young Global Leaders Program. Let's talk about the WEF and its relationship with ESG.
Yeah, so the WEF signed a strategic partnership with the United Nations to push the Sustainable Development Goals. And they do that in the form of ESG. So ESG was a concept that was originally developed out of the United Nations back in 2005. And again, it's the business component of how do we push our SDG agenda on the world. And so the World Economic Forum has been very much on board with this. And, you know, very key players in the corporate sector, whether that's Larry Fink at BlackRock or, you know, Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America, you know, they have also entered into partnerships with the World Economic Forum to push this agenda. You know, you have to give them credit. This has been a very clever movement because what they realized was we have tremendous leverage in the financial system. If we, the UN through the WEF, et cetera, if we can get control of the financial system, we can control any industry in the world that we want to because they all rely on capital. And we can even control people. And if you want a demonstration of that, just look at how they were able to shut down the truckers' protests in Canada, right? How did they do that? They shut down their bank accounts. They froze their access to their own money. And that stopped those protests overnight. Suddenly they had no food, they had no money, they couldn't spend anything, they couldn't buy anything. So they were able to do all this through the financial system. So this has kind of been the genius of the ESG movement, just realizing the leverage that they have if they can get the reins of the financial system, you know, under their control.
Is the CBDC's concept, is that the next stage in this control?
Yeah, you know, that's in the works, and that seems to be happening, even though no individuals seem to want it. Only governments seem to want it. But currently, a majority of the world's governments are now either beta testing or moving forward in some capacity to establish a central bank digital currency. And what this would be is, you know, rather than have your money be, you know, what's called fiat currency, and it's, you know, cash or deposits in a bank account, our currency would then be issued directly by a central bank, and we would have wallets. We'd have, you know, wallets that we can keep in apps on our phone or something like this. But it allows the government not only to have complete access to the information of your spending habits, but even to potentially control them. So this central bank digital currency could be programmed, and it could say, well, you know, we don't want you spending money on gasoline for your car, or we'll set caps of how much you can spend per month, or we don't want you spending money on firearms or ammunition or whatever. So, you know, the CBDC is not going to be usable for that sort of thing. They could also use it for monetary policy. So, for example, you could apply negative interest rates to a CBDC, which you can't do to cash or bank deposits. And what that would be is if they're basically deducting a percentage, a negative interest rate, every week or every month. And so if they do a stimulus program, for example, this would really force you to spend that money versus saving it and investing it, because you know that a certain percentage of it is just going to evaporate, you know, according to this negative interest rate policy. So it gives governments a tremendous amount of control over the population that they don't currently have with cash and bank deposits.
What about when people seek alternative forms of, well, let's put it this way, they convert their bank account, for example, to gold, just as an example. What do you anticipate that the globalists will try to do to circumvent that?
Yeah, you know, you can certainly do that. And there's been, you know, cryptocurrencies are also, you know, an attempted response. I think you're going to see a lot more regulation in that space. And people can do that to some extent, but you can't go to a grocery store and pay with gold. Your day-to-day living has to have a currency attached to it. And so, people, I think, can step out of the system a little bit, but fundamentally, you really can't. It's probably more than 95% of the people in the US right now that have some sort of bank account and banking relationship, and you just can't exist without that. You can't buy anything, you can't receive payments, you can't get, salary payments or anything. So it's going to be very hard to get outside of this system with gold or crypto or anything else.
How about a hybrid approach? You keep some in gold and silver and other investments, and you play in the system as much as you have to spend to pay your bills.
Yeah, and it's probably a wise investment strategy. I don't think we've seen the end of inflation. There's a lot of predictions that it's going to escalate again in the coming years. So people are looking for, a currency is two things. It's a medium of exchange and it's a store of value. And we're losing its function as a store of value with the inflation that we're experiencing right now. So as an investment strategy, people are looking for real things. Can I invest in gold? Can I invest in, as you say, commodities and metals or land, real estate, something physical that I can hold. The other thing that is an interesting trend with banking and finance is that people are looking to alternatives to the big Wall Street banks. And the reason is that these banks, not only are often following these ESG policies, but they're also assisting the government in surveillance. We saw on January 6th, after the riots at the Capitol, Bank of America data mined their customers' accounts to hand over information to the FBI, who traveled near DC, who might have purchased firearms in the last 2 weeks. None of this, they did not have a warrant for any of this, highly illegal, according to our Constitution, but they did it anyway. And so I think a lot of people are looking at alternatives. Should I bank with a local savings and loan? Should I bank with a local community bank that may have values closer to mine? You'd asked earlier, about people making choices. We may be seeing a lot of companies or a lot of industries kind of divide themselves between red companies and blue companies. If people don't want to be exposed to content on Disney, there are alternative companies that are springing up that are producing, content for children that doesn't have the political bias. Banking may be going that way. We're seeing publishing books, publishing companies that are, being set up to produce, books for conservative parents, kids' books. We have a conservative phone company, Patriot Mobile. Increasingly, I think we are seeing choices now coming up and a huge opportunity for entrepreneurs to start to serve this segment of the population that's being alienated.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money. You're almost describing what I would label as a parallel society.
Strangely, yes. I think we may be heading that way to some extent, and there's a huge economic cost to that. It's just a bizarre way for an economy to be run. But that may be happening. And we are seeing a lot of red states boycott woke banks and woke investment managers, whether that's BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, Bank of America, Citibank, West Virginia, Florida, Texas, Missouri, they are starting to step up and say, we're not going to do business with these banks and looking for alternative financial companies to deal with.
Yeah, that's only going to work for so long, in my humble opinion, Kevin. I'm from Maricopa County. Do I need to say any more about elections? And
Right.
in fact, I was deeply involved in investigating election fraud in 2020 and again in 2022. And it's what's interesting to me is this is how far the infiltration has gone into America. I know that, for example, Mitch McConnell at the national level, Kevin McCarthy to some degree, and also Rona McDaniel, the RNC chair, and then you go down to Maricopa County, former student of mine, Bill Gates, not that Bill Gates, but the Bill Gates that was the chairman of the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors that led that debacle of an election where 60% of the machines failed in Republican districts on opening. And the county clerk and recorder, who's also a Republican name only, Mark Reischer, or Stephen Reischer, these two have a pack of Republicans to conspire to work against America First candidates like Kari Lake. And Mitch McConnell, we know, pulled funding from 8 senatorial races because he deemed that they were America First candidates. I don't think it'll be long in a parallel society to where you go in and you fix a few elections, you know, pad the campaigns of some people, and you'll get laws passed against parallel societies.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that they don't need to do that so widespread. There's probably just a few key
exactly.
jurisdictions that you need to really influence to sway things your way, as divided as the American population is today.
So when you look at this too, and you see people who may want to establish a parallel society to keep their moral head above water, and then they get legislated against, and they don't feel their vote matters, where does this end? Do you see America totally capitulating to this because the other side owns the pressure points of power?
It's a really tough thing to try to predict. In support of the ESG industry, you have most Western governments, certainly virtually all of Europe, now the United States under the Biden administration. As I mentioned, you have more than $50 trillion in investment assets. That's, you know, our pension money, our savings, our investment money that's being used for these purposes. And currently you have most of corporate America behind it. That's a pretty formidable opponent for anyone who wants to stand up. Now, having said that, there's been a good bit of pushback. So Sri Lanka is kind of one of the most extreme cases of a country that actually followed this agenda. They banned the import of synthetic fertilizers because that's what the UN and the WEF says you need to do to be green. Immediately they had a famine, and that government was overthrown and forced out of the country. Right. You know, you saw governments go conservative in Italy and Sweden in response to a lot of this. And, you are seeing pushback at the state level here in the U.S. because people are starting to see the effects of this. The problem with central planning is that inevitably it leads to shortage, it leads to inflation, and it leads to a decline in people's living standards. And we're seeing that already. We're seeing shortages in the most basic things, you know, fuel, for heating, for transportation, for manufacturing. We're seeing food prices go through the roof because farmers rely on diesel fuel and synthetic fertilizers that are derived from natural gas. So people are starting to suffer on a personal level. It's not just theoretical anymore. And the question is, you know, at what point do people get so fed up that the system gets popular pushback? Now, I personally thought that might have happened at the midterms, and I was surprised to see that it didn't. I think there's a little bit of a Stockholm syndrome going on here where people, you know, fall in love with their tormentors. And so a lot of people seem to be happy to continue down this path. But I think it's only going to get worse. It's only going to be more of the same and more inflation and more shortages. And, either people are going to just say, oh, you know, I accept this. This is my new reality. Or they're going to say we've had it and they're going to start pushing back.
Everyone's going to have a breaking point. But I think the universal breaking point is when you can't feed your kids and there's no hope for the future. Hope is taken away. And that's when I think... See, you know, people like you and I, we're having a legitimate, civilized discussion about this, and maybe we'll get into strategies that might help people counter. But to the great unwashed that is ignorant of politics and doesn't pay attention, I think they're going to go from 0 to 60 very quickly in terms of the anger and the violence quotient. I think they're the ones that will be in the streets because they won't have progressively gone about a systematic solution. Where do you see this ending up, though? Do you see widespread civil disobedience to begin with?
I hope not. The problem with this, the ESG system, is none of us have a vote in it. We're all disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. We don't have a say. Nothing in this movement says, we should ask people what they want or what consumers want, or that anyone should have a vote in it. It's all decided by elites. And the problem is that the more that you disenfranchise people and push them outside the system, the less they trust the system, the less they believe in it, and the less that they're going to support it. So, I hope that this gets resolved at the ballot box. I hope, even though there's no indication, that there may be a reversal of some of these policies, that we start to realize how much damage we're doing to ourselves by handicapping our own energy and food industries in the United States. And we do a 180-degree turn at the federal level. But there's no sign of that yet.
No, and it won't be with the ruling party. I think they're totally on board. With one of the things I'm wondering too, and this is more of a global type of question, but not everyone's on board with this incoming digital, which really will force everyone to comply. And it's the gold-backed nations, and that seems to be spreading. Do you see this as a resistance to Davos and the World Economic Forum, or how do you view the gold movement among nations now?
It's that, and it's just people just trying to preserve their savings. It's people looking for alternatives to these currencies. The fact that we can inflate away the value of the dollar to the extent that we have, it just destroys people's savings, and I think people are desperate for anywhere to kind of put their savings so that they can preserve their lifestyle and to be able to retire and have a comfortable future. So I think that's part of it, and part of it is also ideological. But what we've seen just in terms of the loss of people's savings and standard of living in the United States is stunning, but it's multiples worse than that outside of the U.S. We're blessed here with energy abundance and food abundance. Right. So what we experience here is a fraction of what the rest of the world is experiencing.
Well, until we're forced to eat bugs, how do you view that topic? It's very controversial.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of doing that. It's interesting that this is an industry that the insiders, I mentioned Bill Gates, but that they're plowing so much money into these companies that make these alternative synthetic foods. But in Australia, they're actually putting bugs into school lunches.
I know.
So again, trying to get the children used to this, so that it can become normalized. So it's another example of them, targeting the young. And I had asked early on as a parent, why do we need to do this to kids in elementary school? Why can't you introduce these programs in high school or college? And they said, well, by that point, they're too critical. They won't accept it the same way that little kids do. So the whole plan is really to get to little minds before they're able to think for themselves and indoctrinate them in that way. Don't let them become, smart enough to actually think critically about what you're telling them. So they're trying to get Australian kids now, that's part of their school lunches, eat the bugs. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it in the U.S. at some point.
I can't believe parents actually would permit their kids to go along with this.
Yeah, I also am baffled by that as well. I know that the demand among parents for the vaccines has been plummeting, particularly when it comes to giving it to their kids. But the CDC is now pushing it. That's part of the vaccine regimen for kids, according to our federal government. But I think a lot of parents are saying, well, wait a minute. This is still kind of at the experimental stage and this whole mRNA technology, and our kids aren't getting sick anyway to begin with. But there's also parents on the other side that feel like this is a good thing, and they believe in these causes, and they want their kids to be a part of the solution. So there's parents on both sides.
My eyes tell me that the parents that are compliant with these big pharma demands are in the minority, the growing minority. I think people have seen through a lot of this now. Now we have data that's out that's readily available that talked about the fallacies of the programs that we tried to implement to fight COVID. And that's why I think they just have a growing problem. But, you know, if they come in with the digital, Kevin, and they control your bank account, they can control you. They can take away your choice.
Yes. If the U.S. implements a central bank digital currency, then I think we're in a different world. There's no coming back from that. And, you know, as I said, there does not seem to be any demand whatsoever among the population. Nobody wants this. This is not a push that's coming from consumers. By all statistics, most people have bank accounts. They're more or less happy with their bank arrangements. They can make payments on their credit cards or pay however they want. And it works. So there is absolutely no demand among the population for a central bank digital currency. It's only government officials that want this.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to come a time when the irresistible force meets the immovable object, and we're going to see conflict come out in some unpredictable way at this time. You know, there's a lot I'm hearing about and seeing with regard to Elon Musk and his tensions with Apple Computer, and really kind of his tensions with the brain trust of the World Economic Forum. What's going on there?
It's interesting to watch this space. So, you know, he's definitely had a little bit of a conflict with Apple, and it's, you know, part of it seems to be he's been tweeting about how they're not being fair to the app creators and you know, charging them too much in fees and whatnot. But, you know, here's kind of an example. So when you look at the ESG rating system, so Standard & Poor's is a company that rates all these companies according to their compliance with ESG, and they all get a score between 0 and 100 for how compliant they are. So General Motors, for example, who says that they are going to go 100% EVs, they get a score of a 72, which is about as high as you can get because there's always room for improvement with your ESG behavior. On the other hand, Tesla, which actually makes electric cars, they're a lowly 38 score, and one of the lowest scores given out as far as ESG compliance goes to Twitter, who got a 14. So, you know, you can see the evidence right there that Elon Musk's views are not particularly being favored by the ESG industry. And, you know, I don't want to portray him as a savior or anything else. You know, he's an entrepreneur and he's, you know, doing what makes a good profit and what he believes in. But he has stood up for free speech. And this is something that the tech community absolutely does not like, whether that's Apple or Google or whoever. You know, it reminds me of the situation with Parler, who tried to set up an alternative to YouTube and said that they were not going to take down conservative content. And that site was shut down by Apple and Amazon and Google. So this shows you the power of the big tech monopolies to control the narrative in the United States today.
Yeah, that's a very good, but that is an outstanding point there. That kind of blends into what you're doing on your work with the Shadow State documentary. And let's take some of what we've talked about here and tell the audience, if they go watch your documentary, The Shadow State, what kinds of topics do you cover?
Yeah, so what we want to do, what we did through the documentary was to show the architecture of the ESG system and how it works, how they're able to gain control over corporate America, and how it affects you. But one of the other themes that we look at is equally important, and this is what happens when you get this partnership between the government and the private sector. So one of the things that comes out of this ESG movement is this devil's bargain between the government and corporations. And government can support corporations, it can support them through subsidies, it can support them through looking the other way on tech monopolies, it can support them through allowing them to front run government policies on environment and things like this, by buying up farmland, by, you know, buying up utilities and things like this. But there's a very dark side to this as well, because in return, corporations are doing things for the government that the government is legally prohibited by our Constitution from doing. And one of the most obvious cases of this is the Twitter scandal, that they are now, it's now come to light that Twitter had been colluding with the Department of Justice and the FBI to censor political speech. Now, there is no speech that is more protected under our Constitution than political speech, for good reason. But we are now seeing evidence that Twitter, at the request of the FBI, censored things like the Hunter Biden laptop story that was being produced by the New York Post. And so this is an example of companies doing on the government's behalf what the government can't do. You know, another example is the one that I mentioned about Bank of America data mining people's accounts without a warrant or cause or any commission of a crime to see who traveled where and who bought what. Another example of that is credit card companies. So, for example, the federal government also is not allowed to go through your accounts without probable cause. That's the Fourth Amendment. That's a fundamental right for us. But the government is also prohibited from creating or keeping databases of who owns firearms. Well, they've been able to get the credit card companies to do this for them. So they've created a merchant code for firearms, American Express, Visa, and MasterCard. And they've done this with the explicit intention of tracking firearms purchases and handing this over to law enforcement at the Treasury Department to if they see any activity that they consider suspicious, which could be multiple purchases in different firearms stores or whatever they consider suspicious. So again, the documentary looks into what corporations are doing to become enforcers for the federal government and doing what the government can't do.
Very interesting, but clearly the companies can maybe have a right to censor you, but when they partner with government, don't they both become guilty of violating the First Amendment?
Yes, and this is the case that's now being brought by some state attorney generals. Okay. So Attorney General Landry in Louisiana and also the Attorney General in Missouri have been bringing a case making this exact argument that if the government is compelling companies to do things, then that process falls under all the constitutional prohibitions that prevent the government from acting in this way. So it's government by proxy, and it should be illegal. Now, this case is being brought to date. You know, it's still in the discovery phase, but my hope is that this will, you know, get some legs in 2023. And, you know, I was speaking with Attorney General Landry about it out of Louisiana. He's actually featured in our documentary. You know, his
Hello? Kevin, did I lose you?
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Okay. We just had a little blip there. I'm sorry. You were talking about Attorney General Landry?
Yeah. He had said to us, so he's featured in our documentary on this topic, and he said he expects that this will go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I would agree. I just don't trust Justice Roberts. That's a whole other discussion for another time. I'm not sure how they'll perceive that. But very interesting. Well, tell the audience how they can get a copy of your documentary.
Sure. So it's available for streaming. It's also available on DVD. They can go to theshadowstate.com, and you can see it there. It's also free to all Epoch Times subscribers. So you can go to the Epoch Times, Epochtimes, theepochtimes.com. Become a subscriber. I write frequently on this topic, as do other Epoch Times reporters. So you get all of that as well, and you can watch The Shadow State for free.
Yeah, I saw the trailer, and it's very, very intriguing. And it covers a lot of what we've talked about here, from what I understand, from people I know that have seen it. And I do plan to watch it. But unfortunately, the time between when we set up this interview and my schedule, I didn't have time to pursue this. But it's highly recommended by people in my circle. I just want to ask you an Elon Musk question before we go. My sense of Elon Musk, he grabbed Twitter and started systematic, progressive revelations of sensitive material that's embarrassing to some groups and institutions. And I wondered how much of that is leverage, because he seems to be given a diminished status on the world stage with people like at Davos. How do you view that?
Yeah, I think he definitely has become a black sheep. And as I mentioned, his ES scores, he's definitely being punished, by the rating agencies for his behavior. There's continual threats that he might be investigated for this securities violation or others. So he's getting veiled threats from the federal government as well, because the information that he's now made available to journalists. Barry Weiss and Michael Schellenberger and people like this, is now coming to light. And it's hugely embarrassing for the federal government and for these former Twitter execs. And I would expect there will be congressional hearings on it now that the GOP is in control of the House. So I think there's going to be a lot more coming out in that space. And at this point, Musk doesn't even really seem to be pushing it that much. He's just kind of opened the books. And let some journalists take over.
Yeah, that's how I see it too. And but I see him as he continues to be, in his mind, discriminated against. He made up the ante in terms of what he releases. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Kevin Stockman. He's a writer, film producer for Epoch Times, and he has produced the documentary called Shadow State. We recommend it here at the Common Sense Show, and I think it will help you really understand ESG, and it goes way beyond what we talked about here in our interview. Kevin, I want to thank you for your time. A very interesting interview, and I love your organization. I think your group does great work.
I appreciate that, Dave, and thanks very much for having me
My
on.
pleasure. Take care.